Welcome to Worlds Apart. If you look at the portrayal of Russia in Western papers from the 19th century onward, it almost invariably presented as a crude, barbaric power ready to maim, gobble, destroy without scruples or hesitation. The conflict in Ukraine seems to have enhanced that image even further, at least in the perception of Western audiences. Does it make sense to even try to clear Russia's name? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Yevgeny Primakov, head of Rossotrudnicheство, Russia's agency for international humanitarian cooperation. Mr. Primakov, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much
Hello.
For your time.
Hi.
Now, your agency has a rather long title and a broad mandate. So to help our audiences understand what you do and how you do it, how is your agency different from USAID, which is perhaps your biggest and richest competitor?
Well, it's very much different. In fact, you know, even not taking into consideration the long name of it, USAID, mm-hmm. USAID is much shorter and more user-friendly.
I
wonder if our English-speaking audience could even pronounce Rossotrudnicheство.
Well, this is part of the exposure to the Russian culture.
Oh, yes. So USAID is much, much larger in terms of budgeting, first of all. And then they have that function of international development, not very much of our sphere of interest and the thing that we're doing. We're very much, we're more concentrated on educational issues, on cultural issues like exhibitions and all that thing. We would certainly prefer to do much more on international development. We even have that governmental program. It's called, in English it's called that way, international development. Assistance for international.
But you have the intention, but don't have enough funds.
No, we don't have enough funds.
Even with the funds that you have, how much geopolitics do you have to take into account? Because with the USAID, they definitely follow the American political line. I assume you also have to further some of that.
We are functionally and a part of Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So we are a state federal agency, but in the structure of MFA. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we do follow all those doctrines, like the importance of the closer, like ex-USSR republics. But at the same time, we are facing a bit of problems these days because of that geopolitics. Mm-hmm.
And who doesn't?
Oh, well, yes. Mainly in, certainly in Western, in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. In Eastern Europe, we have some of our offices, our cultural centers, so-called cultural centers, being closed recently, like in Slovenia, Slovakia, Macedonia, Montenegro, and others. Mm-hmm. In fact, our offices in cultural centers in the United States and Britain were closed last year. Mm-hmm. Our staff was not expelled, but, well, our visas expired and not renewed.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I guess that's in line with how the Russian diplomatic personnel is being treated around the world. And
definitely.
I know that there is now a sort of reshuffling, both in terms of how resources are allocated and how staff is, you know, distributed around the world. Do you think, and from what I know, the Russian Foreign Affairs Ministry wants to pivot more towards a non-Western world as perhaps a more promising area of international cooperation. Is that how you envisage your work in the future?
Well, definitely. Actually, we started that shift a while ago when I just entered Rossotrudnicheство agency 2 years
twister.
Ago.
You can market it as a Russian tongue twister.
This is a kind of empathy, you know. So when I just started my work there, here in the agency 2 years ago, we started a shift we were taking some staff positions from Western Europe and relocating them to Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and others. This is much of a much more importance to us.
Why is that important, since you started it even before the geopolitical difficulties?
The main aim of our agency is building trust, is having those good humanitarian ties with Russia, working with public opinion. And in fact, if we lose support of a public opinion somewhere in Luxembourg, it's not that much harmful, actually.
Really?
Well, comparing to if we lose that friendly opinion towards Russia in Kyrgyzstan, as for example, that would be painful for us, for Russia.
Mr. Primakov, I'm sure you can predict our viewers' next answer. The military operation that Russia is still conducting in Ukraine is definitely watched very closely in its neighboring countries, and it's not watched with excitement. Do you think your work in near abroad and further abroad will have to change the strategies, the methods, the difficulty of that work as a result of Russia's recent decisions?
Well, yes, certainly. We need to be much more proactive. We cannot rely upon only some cultural events like exhibitions or concerts. In fact, we've developed a small brochure on that conflict with some very simple explanations what was happening starting from 2014, like what happened in Odessa, 2nd of May.
Union, definitely.
Who was the journalist called Alice Buzina? What is Aidar? Because, you know, people interested in these events, they certainly can search for the information on the web. They have those websites and so on, but let's take into consideration some ordinary people, like regular ones. They don't have a clue on what was happening and what is happening right now. And we've translated that brochure, it's a couple of pages only, very short and simple. We've translated into 12 languages. Like, it's not only English and French, it's Farsi, it's Romanian, Serbian, and...
Now, you come to this profession as a war reporter and as a field reporter before.
That was my previous life.
Yes, but you can still rely on that experience. Do you think one brochure, or even several brochures, translated into multiple languages can
definitely
do the job?
No, definitely. This is only one hint. A small part of a global, much more wide job, actually. And this is not the way to persuade. This is the way to give instrument to persuade. It's uploaded to a website, so each and every person all around the globe could download it in PDF format, print it, and use it if they need to persuade their, friends or whoever.
Now, I'm sure you follow the discussion here in Russia, and one of the opinions here is that Russia has lost the public opinion battle or media war. Do you agree with that? And do you think there was even a chance of not winning, but being on an equal footing, given the difference in media resources that we have with the West, in terms of not just broadcasting your point of view, but simply broadcasting the facts that you see from your side?
We definitely need to keep broadcasting it. But at the same time, when you play according to the rules that you do not control, you all understand that RT is banned, Sputnik is banned, our news agencies are banned, you have a problem with YouTube. So trying to work in the same field our opponents work is something, not that much effective. And this is not a matter of how are you going to persuade, because you don't manage the field. You don't manage the field. Mainstream media in Europe and United States brainwash public opinion. So I don't think that that is easy to change, actually.
Well, you will be, in part, I'm sorry for interrupting, doing that through real deeds, not just blah, blah, blah.
Definitely.
But
first of all, but you international... need, at the same time, you still need to keep broadcasting. Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember when you first came to this position, you posted, I don't remember, it was a tweet or maybe a Facebook post about how the methods of this organization need to change and how you need to be perhaps far more practical and connected to the needs of the communities that you actually want to benefit. So, for example, having a well instead of, let's say, some contest, language contest dedicated to poet Alexander Pushkin. Is that practicality still part of your job? And can you actually do something meaningful via these methods with the limited resources?
Well, with the limited resources, this is the main point.
So is the main point the limitedness of the resources or the ability to do something?
No. This is a matter of resources limited. The point is that, yes, certainly we're changing our attitude and our programs that are becoming a bit more practical and pragmatic. Just to give you a few examples, we have some certain planned projects like some anniversaries of Russian philosophers or writers or poets or artists or whatsoever. But at the same time, there should be a way to make it more social, like, as for example, last year was 200 years anniversary of Dostoevsky. And I was visiting our cultural center in Berlin, and they had a brilliant exhibition of graphics, some illustrative paperwork for Dostoevsky, Crime and Punishment or something. And I saw a rather old lady visiting it. She was actually alone in the whole hall where those pictures were exhibited. And I was asking our head of the cultural center, why don't you make a seminar on some social problems being described in Dostoevsky works?
And why?
Well, to just gather people. Yeah. So they start discussing, let's say, Crime and Punishment. And then they will certainly see
that
those pictures.
That would be an interesting discussion in today's concert.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, but there are some certain social problems. Well, this is the way. We need to understand what is the need for the audience.
So am I hearing you correctly that not only you have to do a lot of things with the limited resources, you need to do it in a new way that...
Yeah, a bit more creative.
Okay. Now, you still have to project a certain image of Russia, and from my observation, even here in Russia on Russian television, people don't always know that country well, or perhaps don't always understand its motivations accurately. If I were to ask you to describe Russia, what it is as a country, what it stands for, what its values are, in a couple of sentences.
Well, in a couple of sentences.
Well, we don't have
time. I'm not Berdyaev and I'm not Tolstoy to describe it that much easy.
But it's still part of your job. You're projecting a certain image of this country.
Russia is becoming perceived as a continent of inequality. Actually, we have a number of families. They are not, in our terms, compatriots. They are not Russians. They have any. They don't have any ties with Russia, but they have rather traditional families from United States, some farmers and so on. They asked our agency to relocate to Russia to assist them, and we're trying now to find where they can, well, rent some land or something in a couple of Russian regions. This is very important. We know the term Russian world. Mm-hmm. This is not only about compatriots. Mm-hmm. This is about values.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of values?
First of all, equality mm-hmm. and tradition. Mm-hmm. And this is not something, you know, being locked on the past. This is a kind of our view of the future. This is the way to manage our future. There are some a lot of families. They need to raise their children in an adequate ecosphere, in an adequate relations with others, with not being, you know, crazy about things like BLM, LGBT, and all these things. This is good.
Mm-hmm. So conservative values.
Well,
traditional values.
Conservative but adequate.
Okay. Well, let's take an adequate break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Yevgeny Primakov, head of Rossotrudnicheство, Russia's agency for international humanitarian cooperation. Do you think you were talking before about the need to come up with new methods and new ways of doing business? Do you think you may need a new name for yourself to make it more appealing or easier for people?
All these things are really very much bureaucratic. Okay. If we were an NGO, that would be much easier. But we are a state agency, so we need to do a hell of a lot of paperwork.
Okay, and you have to be true to your traditions as well. Don't you think that some of the traditions are holding Russia back, and including its...
Certainly. Mm-hmm. We need to fight our crazy bureaucracy, first mm-hmm. of all. Because we, as for example, if we need to start some project like, you know, funding a network of Russian schools, as for example. First of all, what I get from the Ministry of Finance is that we are a state agency. We cannot spend state money abroad. Mm-hmm. So we need to start elaborating some tricky ways to do so. That's why Russia is doing a lot on financing UN agencies. Mm-hmm. Because then UN agencies do the job, mm-hmm. not Russia directly.
Mm-hmm. But Russia is also not getting the credit for that, for all
its
contribution.
There's a problem.
Now, you seem to be very open about things you don't like here in Russia. That's not a very glossy image of the country, but at least it's honest. Do you think...
I'm a bad bureaucrat.
Well, it's not just about you. I think there is also a certain quality to Russia of being able to accept what it is in both good ways and perhaps not so attractive ways. Do you think that is something that may appeal to foreign audiences? The Russians, you know, accepting themselves for who they are, their difficult history, their challenging circumstances, and perhaps, you know, their interesting future.
This is very much philosophical. Actually, the point is that yes, we do have a lot of our internal problems, and the point is that when we speak to a foreign audience, there is a very tricky situation when we can criticize what we are doing, but we are not very happy when we hear that things from abroad towards Russia. This is our right to criticize ourselves, but not, you know, not being happy with. This is the problem, actually, with all the thing about the foreign agents and so on and so forth, with the Russian opposition, because we have, certainly we have opposition, a very adequate, the same word, but at the same time we have other people being mad, being simply mad.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that culture used to be a big part of your mandate, cultural cooperation, and we are seeing in many Western countries efforts not just to censor, but right out cancel Russian culture, classical Russian culture. You know, people like Tchaikovsky, and you mentioned Dostoevsky. Clearly it's crazy, but I wonder, how do you interpret that on a geopolitical level? Do you think it's just a knee-jerk reaction, or do you think there is a deeper strategy there on the part of people who do that?
Well, I guess both. I guess both. First of all, we have, you know, very psychiatric reaction on what is happening, and then we, as you know, very impulsive, and then at the same time, certainly we do have some very strategic policy towards canceling Russian culture. I will give you a very funny example of that. As you may remember, at the very beginning of the special military operation, there was a Dostoevsky course in Italy being banned or something, and I was reading, you know, comments on Twitter. There was an Italian lady writing something, what a shame, we should not ban Dostoevsky because he is Russian. And there was a brilliant comment of another Italian lady, like, Dostoevsky was banned, Korsun, Dostoevsky was banned not because he was Russian, but because he supported Putin. It was brilliant.
Well, I guess that shows the level of education of certain people who leave comments. But, you know, Russian culture, again, traditional Russian culture has long been celebrated in the West and around the world for its ability to reach into the depth of the human soul. And if we indeed take the current conflict as an ontological battle between Russia and the West, then perhaps it makes sense to ban some of the of those works precisely because of the ability to sort of cut through the ideological chorus. Do you think that has any relevance to what's happening today?
Certainly. It is, actually, it is it was already called a couple of times like a clash of civilizations or something. And certainly, Russian civilization in terms of heritage, in terms of culture, is very much different, is very much different. During last, let's say, 30 plus years, our opponents were constantly trying to make us simple, easy and stupid. And that didn't work.
Well, you know, I've been following American political science for quite some time, and I agree with you, it's a habit to present Russia as this carrier of crude, barbaric power, as opposed to the Americans who supposedly rely only on soft or smart power and, you know, make their friends and allies comply with their wishes because they genuinely want so. But we understand both, I think we would agree, that it's not the case. But if you look at other examples of Russian humanitarian involvement or humanitarian investment, let's take Afghanistan, for example. There was a military operation there, but there was also a massive effort to invest in schools, in bridges, in education. The level of financing was on par with the American. But the Russians have never really taken credit for what they tried to do. Do you think that's still a problem in this day and age?
Definitely it is. I worked in Afghanistan. I had a few missions there. And once I met a guy that fought against Soviets. Actually, I met a lot of those, but that one was quite, you know, special. The guy was covered with blood because he was cutting some sheep or whatsoever on the market, and he told me, you know, it was such a pleasure to fight with you because you fought honestly. We saw your soldiers, we fought against those, you fought against us. directly, and at the same time, you were building hospitals, schools, and all this stuff. But those Americans, we even do not see them. They bomb us from somewhere from outer space, and that's it, full stop. I saw a great respect, actually, to things being done by Soviet Union, by Russia, even taking into consideration that we were fighting, actually.
Do you think that may repeat itself in Ukraine? Because there is also a question of how this war is fought in Ukraine. The portrayal you see in the Western media is absolute bloodthirstiness. You know, Russians being not just barbaric, but killing people for the sake of killing. But I think the way it's viewed from the inside, I do think there is a certain dignity that the Russian military affords to itself and how it fights its own wars. Do you think the Ukrainians, as much as they hate us, understandably hate this country right now, do you think they will come to the same realization a couple of years, a couple of decades down the line?
I hope so. I don't know how much time would it take, actually. But we're doing a lot, even taking into consideration we cannot spend, our agency cannot spend state money abroad. We have a partner organization, an NGO, Russian Humanitarian Mission. They're actually delivering humanitarian aid there, and not only food, but medical instruments, surgical equipment, and so on. And we hope that at some moment that will work, actually, because people will start to understand that keeping up with Russia is a thing of dignity, peace, prosperity, and this is good. Mm-hmm. This is good. Again, don't know how much time would it take.
Mm-hmm. Now, you worked with the Russian humanitarian mission before taking this post, and I know it took you to the Donetsk and Lugansk regions, where people have waited for Russia to intervene for quite some time. I'm going to ask you a sensitive question, but it's an honest question nonetheless. Given that Russia is perceived as an aggressor, don't you think that perhaps Russia, on the contrary, waited for way too long to help those people on humanitarian grounds?
I'm a bureaucrat. I'm not in a position to criticize decisions. But at the same time,
I'm asking you in your former capacity.
Okay, I'm a citizen. And yes, certainly, I think that our intervention, not in terms of military, military intervention, but doing something to assist these people, to save them, this is the thing that should have been done long before these events started.
So, would it be fair to say that Russia, instead of being impulsive, was actually very hesitant when it comes to Ukraine and its breakaway regions?
We were giving chance to our, some time ago we called those states and people partners, but now I don't know how to call them, opponents, let's say opponents. We were giving a lot of chances to Ukraine to solve the problem. We were relying upon those Minsk agreements for a long while. But, well, it's finished.
Well, it's not yet finished, but let's hope that when it is finished, then your agency will be able to do at least a little bit to make sure that Russia and Ukraine, if not like each other, then can at least communicate with each other.
Definitely.
Mr. Primakov, it's been a great pleasure talking
to you.
Thank you
very much.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart next week.